Hey creeps, I'm Laura, and with me today I have my beautiful co-host Rick.
Hello.
And Rick, who do we have on today?
We have Seth, Mr. Breedlove, if you're nasty, from Small Town Monsters. Yeah, I see that.
That's a new way to introduce me.
I figured it'd be the first time you would call Mr. Breedlove if you're nasty, you know.
Yeah.
Well, welcome aboard, Seth. We're happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So, Seth, you make movies. Can you tell us all about that?
Yeah, I make movies. I run a production company called Small Town Monsters. Also, just full disclosure, I have not slept yet. Last night, my son had a basketball game this morning at like 8 a.m. and for some reason I was absolutely panic stricken. I was going to sleep through my alarm, and so I just panic couldn't sleep. So if I seem completely out of it, that's why. I was up watching Barstool Sports pizza reviews for most of the night. So I run a production company called Small Town Monsters, and we make documentaries about cryptids and the paranormal around the United States. And we do feature films, and then we also have a YouTube channel that we've focused pretty heavily on for the last year as well. So I guess that's the short version of it.
Yeah. So how did you get into the paranormal and cryptids? Was that something that you're interested in when you're a little kid, like Tommy's age, or was it just something over time that, you know, just sparked your interest?
Yeah, no, I had no interest in the paranormal when I was a kid. I wasn't.
Really?
Oh, yeah, I wasn't even aware of the paranormal as a thing until, I think as a kid, I would have assumed or been told that it was demonic or satanic, or like it was all, you know, like, that's probably what I would have assumed. My first awareness of it that I remember would have been, when the Mothman Prophecies movie came out in 2002, prior to that movie coming out, I remember my older sister Sarah bought a copy of the book by John Keel. There was a paperback version of that book that was put out that had the movie poster as the cover. And I picked it up assuming it was going to be a novelization of the movie. And then my sister was like, oh, you're probably not going to like that. It's, you know, it's about like people that think they see, UFOs and like, a Mothman and stuff like that. And I was like, I remember I could not wrap my brain around the fact that there were people that thought that stuff was like literally real.
Yeah.
And so that's the first time I really remember being introduced to that as a subject matter. I know for a fact that I watched Unsolved Mysteries with my grandma a lot.
Oh yeah.
When I was a kid, and I'm 100% sure we watched stuff on Bigfoot and all that kind of thing, but most of it must not have stuck with me. But that was like, yeah, that was my introduction. That would have been 2002. And then, I used to run the soundboard at my old church, and the guy that ran the soundboard with me was a weirdo, and he thought I was kind of considered a weirdo, and so he must have just assumed we were on the same wavelength. And one day he burned me a DVD with all these like television documentaries about Bigfoot and Ogopogo and UFOs and that kind of thing, and he gave it to me, and I watched it, and then from then on I was hooked. So
yeah,
and that was like what. That's my very boring origin story. I had no experiences of my own or anything. But that was how I got into it. And then I was working a medical billing job at the time, around 2000, this would have been like 2010, 2009, somewhere in there. Mm-hmm. And the same guy, well, actually, no, this would have been 2007. So 2007, he told me that his dentist had experiences, like Bigfoot experiences, in the town I had grown up in, which was Bolivar, Bolivar, Ohio, which is like little stopgap town off of the Highway 77. And he had told me that she was a very believable person and he didn't know what to make of it and blah, blah, blah. And did I want to talk to her? And I, of course, said yes. And so I spoke to her and her husband. Her husband was the district attorney for Canton at the time, Stark County. And she was, yeah, she owned a prominent dentistry. And she also, it wasn't just them, but they both, like, I talked to them both together and they both were corroborating each other's stories, but they also had three children who corroborate everything, which is, so the confusing thing is the stories they were telling today, especially, are so outlandish when you hear them that it's like, it still kind of boggles my mind because these are the most believable people, some of the most believable people I've ever spoken to. But yeah, their stories were about a Sasquatch family that lived on their property. So if you've seen On the Trail of Bigfoot, we go to this area, general area, in the very first one. But that, just to explain where it is, it's on the backside of Bolivar, which is a, you know, in the middle of nowhere, a lot of like rural farm country and then tons of woods. In fact, like once you leave my parents' house, like my parents' old house, if you had walked out the back door, behind their house was like a tree line and then a field and then the Tuscarawas River and then probably nothing but forest if you wanted to, all the way down to Salt Fork.
Okay.
I grew up in Northeast Ohio, and that there's almost like this thumbnail that lines the state of Ohio with like dense forest. And that's where we live, to the northern end of that. In fact, like Don Keating, who's like this famous Bigfoot researcher in Ohio, had coined this phrase, the Sasquatch Triangle. He'd like on a map outlined where the largest number of reports were in the state of Ohio. And they ended in kind of at the northern tip would have been right at this area.
Okay.
So, and it's all coal mine. It was privately owned land. All of it was coal mined, strip mined. And then, but anyway, these people were claiming that a family of Sasquatch were coming up into their yard, and that I feel like they used to say they would leave scraps or something out for them too. But at any rate, the weirdest part of the story is that they would follow these things on horseback, and the family would lead them back to their home, which was in a cave, which made sense because it's all coal mine, strip mine land. So I know there are caves back there. But very odd, like, especially like my, you know, like despite the fact that I make a lot of movies that dabble in like high strangeness, I'm personally very much like a flesh and blood.
Yeah.
Bigfoot is an animal guy.
Yep.
And so this is that story has really left me with a lot of questions even today. I mean, it doesn't necessarily refute my own personal opinions, but it's also like what was going on there, because, you know, it's an odd thing. I really would love to interview these people at some point for the project. I'm sure by now they know I talk about them. I mean, it was on
the
movie, and she's really into, she still is into Bigfoot stuff as far as I know. So I'm sure she's aware of it. So I'm hoping at some point I can even get down there. I used to just drive the roads
In hope of
seeing something. Especially at night, because back there on those roads back in 2007 to like 2010, it was completely desolate. There was no one down there. There were no houses. Now I mean, you can even see it in that on the trail of Bigfoot. There's houses they've started developing. A lot of the land's gotten sold. It's not, I don't even know if the company that owned that property still owns it. I think they just sold it off in parcels to people and people are building houses back. There's a whole development back there in one of the areas. So, but I know that my parents just moved out of that area in the last 2 years. And I know that even 2 years ago, there were some things that happened down there that were kind of odd. My dad said that one day he saw what he assumed was a man out in the field. It was like hunched over. And he thought at first it was a wolf because they have these, coy wolves. They keep seeing these coy wolves down in that area, but he said he thought it might've been a wolf or a coyote, but then it stood up on two legs and took off across the field. I haven't talked about that anywhere just because it more than likely was a man, because he was too far to really see it, but that happened. Okay. And then there were some strange sounds. Something was driving all the deer out of the field up into my parents' backyard, which I grew up in that house. They lived there for 50 years. That had never happened until the last couple of years. That was kind of odd. There were very large wolves seen down in that field, which is, you know, those presumably those coy wolves. But yeah, things were odd. I remember one night we got a call from my parents, like almost like a panicked call, that during at like, this was like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock in the morning. It was still dark out. They woke up and they said there were stars all over the tree line behind the house. And they were freaking out about this. And so Adam Dugan happened to be in town. And so Adam Dugan and I go down to my parents' house, like John Keel or something, like we're going to solve this mystery. And we did. We solved the mystery. It was the neighbors. They had one of those projector lights for Christmas, and it had fallen over, and it was shining
up.
But it's the cutest story if you hear it, because my parents were convinced they were seeing some sort of phenomenon, and they watched it for like 10 minutes, like awed, like they were awestruck by it. They were just sitting there in the kitchen watching these lights dancing on the trees.
Oh my gosh.
Thinking that they were witnessing some crazy, you know, thing. And are those Legos?
Yeah. Very cool. My wife gifts me for my birthday and Christmas. I've got Millennium Falcon, AT-AT, AT-ST. I got a TIE fighter. I've got over here on the other side, what's his name? Adam Driver's ship. I've got,
oh, nice.
Yeah, that's like the running theme. So every Christmas and birthday, I get a Lego set like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Seth, you're into toys and action figures, right?
Yeah. That's like, it's not a new development. I've always been into that stuff. Comic books have always been a big part of my life. I did heavily get back into it over the last year, just given it's like, for me, it's my escape thing right now. It's either that or Fortnite. I play a heck of a lot of Fortnite.
Does Tommy play with you, or is that just
you? Tommy and I play. Okay. Yeah, it's actually, so that's actually how that's how Adam and I still, you know, kind of keep in touch. He lives down in Tennessee and he has a son. And we did we called it the two dads vacation this past year, which was also kind of an inside joke, because once we were walking with Tommy and he insisted on holding both of our hands, and then he just kept screaming two dads, and we were like, I guess we're a couple now.
That's funny.
but we did this. Yeah, we took our sons down to Tennessee, and it's hilarious to me now, but we spent all this money to rent a condo in Gatlinburg, and then we barely left the condo because all we did was play Fortnite as a group, like the four of us. Tommy plays with me.
That's cool.
That's a nice bonding experience. Does Tommy like, is he into monsters or anything like that?
So yeah, he is absolutely 100% obsessed with the Flatwoods Monster. Our movie is on a pretty constant loop here. And then when I pick him up from school, he wants to listen to Brandon's soundtrack.
Yeah.
It's either that it's either the Flatwoods score, the Man of Steel score, or I have a Tommy playlist with like a lot of, you know, like cartoons and stuff like that. But yeah, Tommy got really into Flatwoods, and then he enjoyed the Mothman Legacy for a little while. His cousin Amy is in that movie. And then I made the mistake 2 weeks ago of letting him watch Momo, and he watched it like three times in a day, and then had nothing but nightmares.
For
nights on top of nights. So Momo's out again, out of the rotation. But he asks me a lot, you know, like if Bigfoot's real, and things like that. He spent time out at the cabin in Minerva with me. In fact, he was there the weekend I had my sighting. He was there with me. He was there the night that Heather and I had the stuff surround the cabin. So he's been, in my estimation, he's been in very close proximity to them already. And I think he's actually had Woodnox returned.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he likes to, when we would go out there, because for the first few weeks we were going out to the cabin in Minerva, you could Woodnox and get a return Woodnox instantly. Mm-hmm. We'd hear Woodnox all the time. And there were multiple occasions where he did Woodnox and we heard stuff in the distance. I think there was a whoop incident too, where he used to call for Bigfoot by just screaming Bigfoot in the woods. And I think there was an incident where I think he did that and there was a return, either a whistle or a whoop. I can't remember which it was.
Nice. Yeah. Every time I scream about Bigfoot in the woods, I don't get anything back.
Yeah. Well, he screams about Bigfoot at my current house, which is in a neighborhood. And I try to tell him there's probably nothing here, buddy. But he's into this stuff for sure, though. He's seen, I know he's seen On the Trail of UFOs. He asks me questions about all this stuff.
Yeah.
He wants to know about Mothman.
The curious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He wants to know about Mothman and he wants to know about UFOs and he wants to know about Bigfoot. He's very intrigued by Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Because people will tell him, like, especially on his mom's side of the family, like people on that side of the family will tell him Bigfoot's not real, which I think is very confusing to him because his dad, I'm claiming I've seen one, which is a paradox. I'd never considered that. Like, I'd never thought of that, what that means to a child. Like, cause you're saying I'm either crazy or a liar.
Right.
So a child is like, oh wow, you know, like he's trying to make sense of it, because then I have to explain, well, a lot of people haven't seen this stuff and so most people don't think it is real. Mm-hmm. You know, and I also haven't thrown the wrench in the works that I'm still not completely convinced even having seen one.
That's how I feel like I would talk myself out of having thought I saw it.
We're very skeptical.
I think you're in the same camp we are, Seth. Like, we don't, we haven't had paranormal experiences. We haven't seen Bigfoot. We haven't seen ghosts. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily believe it because we haven't seen that evidence. There's nothing there for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The time, the longer time goes on, the more I find myself questioning what I actually saw. Because of the fact that I think whatever happened down there, last like September through November, we happened to luck into it, and I think they're gone.
So Heather, can you tell people like what you saw for people who don't know what you're talking about?
Heather Mosier, who is the small town monsters researcher and book editor, lives on a property down in outside of Minerva that has a history of sightings and odd activity. It's very large, like 400 and some acres. Her mother-in-law had a sighting right down the road back in 2017, I want to say, in a field. And obviously you're outside of Minerva too. So there's a long history in that general area. So we were aware of this, and she had been, I guess you would call it gifting, I don't think she necessarily considers it that, and I would be hard pressed to consider what she does gifting to. But she's definitely like doing stuff, trying, you know, like she would leave things out in the woods and things like that. And then the strangest was there was a rock she had left out that was taken and then replaced with a skull, like a squirrel skull. And then later the squirrel skull disappeared and the rock came back. So there were all sorts of things like that happening in the woods, which is, you know, really, really unusual. But the property is not your classic Bigfoot habitat. Initially I thought it was, but the more time I spent there and the more drone footage I got and the more satellite imagery I looked at, it is just not. There's patchy woods and a lot of field.
Okay.
And, you know, it's not dense forest by any stretch of the imagination. So it was unusual to me that this was happening, but we decided we were going to do an episode of Beyond the Trail, which is a series we make for YouTube with Alexander Petikov and at the time Eli Watson. And we would go, we went down there and we stayed for like a week, and it was actually just kind of a fun, they were just coming back from this insane like trip they had been on that was, I think it was Colorado and Utah or something like that, and they had done tons of backpacking, and so this was almost like a vacation for them after that.
Right.
So they came through and we had some stuff happen. They pitched a tent up in the a patch of woods that we call the Rougarou woods, because we shot some of the recreations for Skinwalker, the Howl of the Rougarou, in that same patch of woods. And they had one night they had gone to sleep, and at like 2 or 3 in the morning they heard very clear running footsteps, and it sounded like something bipedal running past the tent on 2 feet. And there were other things that happened. I had a crazy experience with Tommy one night, where a wood knock went off right outside the cabin him and I were sleeping at about 2 o'clock in the morning. So we had little things happen, and it was enough that I thought, well, we should do a series just set in the woods there for YouTube. And it was called the Bigfoot Project, and it was originally going to be this. It was originally going to be this, basically like a podcast with an investigative part to it.
And okay.
And the way things work at SDM is I don't come up with formulated plans for anything. We just like,
you're just like, I want to do this.
I want to do this, and then we go out and we make it, and we figure it out as we're making it. That's literally like every project we've ever done. That's how it works.
That's how we operate. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I don't plan anything.
Yeah. And so that's what we were doing. And we had this. So the first shoot down there was just going to be, it wasn't even a filming night. It was, we had all the kids down there. So it was Heather and I, and then her kids and Tommy, and we had a fire going, and we got pizza, and we were just hanging out with the kids, having fun, and they were getting bored. We put them in the cabin, and they went in the cabin, and then like all sorts of activity happened. We had like crazy knocks, not even wood. We think they were banging on a rubber drum that's up in the Rougarou woods at one point. Rocks thrown at us, just the clearest activity I've ever experienced, to a really insane degree. And then the next day I had a sighting over on the other side of the hill from the cabin, while I was out hanging trail cams. And it seemed to be like a dark brown, upright, hair-covered creature that was sprinting across a pipeline, so like a clear cut on the side of this hill. And I don't know what I saw. I just know that I think I saw a Bigfoot, just given the way it looked. I know that we ran it back. We retraced our steps in the ATV I was in at the time, and there was nothing in the way that could have, that I could have, like an optical illusion or something. It was, right. There was nothing there. But yeah, like I said, it is one of those things where the longer I look at that area, the more I'm confused by what they were doing there. Now, I do know the neighboring property, which is much larger and had a much larger, more dense forested area with what I would consider much more suitable habitat for these things, mm-hmm. had larger water sources, it had caves, it has creeks and all that kind of stuff. There's no creeks running through the property where we were at. But the neighboring property did, and they started cutting lines through it for ATV trails. And I guess it's to the point now where they're clear cut. I mean, they're clear cutting everything. So I think what happened is these things were probably living over there and then got pushed over toward us. And we happened to catch it
at
just the perfect time. It makes sense if you think of it in those terms, because if they were just pushed over to where we were, then they were on a smaller, obviously they're not sticking to property lines, but they're on a smaller property with smaller patches of forest. So maybe you're more likely to have those types of run-ins like we did over the next few months. But I just know that activity there really dried up by the time we filmed the cliff episode and took Cliff down there last May. Like, nothing happened there. So
if you didn't see a Bigfoot, what do you think it could have been? Just like a guy in a ghillie suit, or
no? I don't believe any of that either. I don't believe that. Yeah, that's why it's not. I can't rationalize it to be. Yeah. It was not a person. I haven't been able to. I think it was a Bigfoot. I'm 99% sure that I saw a Bigfoot, but. It is like one of those things where the longer it goes on, the more you're like, well, what the heck? Like, what are the odds? Why was it out there in broad daylight, 2 p.m. in the afternoon on a completely sunny day? But those things, everything that happened that weekend was really blatant.
Yeah. And it all adds up into that vein. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, it was odd because these things are supposed to be really, really shy, and everything we experienced was not that, but it did remind me of activity I've experienced in other places like Area X. I mean, the type of stuff that was going on was comparable to what we experienced in X. But it just is an odd place for it to be happening because it's Ohio farm country.
Right.
Right.
So
it's no, I was going to ask if you thought maybe this was part of a migratory pattern, but if they haven't returned since May, then obviously not. So maybe they've moved on.
Yeah. I think they just got pushed out. That's my opinion. I don't buy into the migratory stuff.
Yeah.
Not on a large scale. I'm 100% sure that in mountainous regions, they're going to move out of the high peaks areas and down into the lowlands during certain times of the year. And that holds up in the Adirondacks, where the sighting reports kind of ebb and flow based on the time of year. Mm-hmm. But it's not I don't think it's a very big range. I don't know how big the range is. I know Cliff thinks it's like 8 miles. Like, that might be an 8 square mile kind of range that they would move within. I have no knowledge of that kind of stuff. And I don't, the other thing is I don't profess to be a Bigfooter. I'm a filmmaker. I have an interest in this stuff. If you watch the Bigfoot Project, it should be pretty obvious. I'm not a Bigfooter. I'm not out there doing the kind of stuff that like Alex and Eli do. I'm just out there as a yokel, like hanging out in the woods. And if something happens, cool. I don't have the knowledge or even, I guess, I don't even know that I have the interest in going out there and trying to perform some sort of technique or whatever that brings these things in. I'm not necessarily into that kind of stuff. I'm not hanging pheromones in the woods and things like that.
Well, it seems very ritualistic. People go out, they knock on trees, they whoop, they leave. They leave a jar of peanut butter open, those kinds of things. Yeah. It is very ritualistic.
Well, we've done all that In fact, like when I was in Alaska, I think Rob Roy, who runs the Bigfoot Art Gallery in Palmer, was trying to get me killed. He was like, he was making suggestions on ways I could entice a Bigfoot to come in. And he's like, yeah, take a jar of peanut butter out there and put it in a tree open. And I'm like, okay. And I was staying basically alone at this pioneer cabin about 3 miles from the cabin where everyone else was. So I'm staying in this pioneer dry cabin, as they were called. There's no running water in the woods. And I go outside and put this peanut butter in a tree. And
was it crunchy or smooth? Or creamy peanut butter? Was it the crunchy peanut butter?
I think it was crunchy because that's all they had. I don't think I'm okay with crunchy anymore. But anyway, I went inside and I shut the lights off and I lay down, and like 5 seconds later, I sit up and I'm like, what am I doing? Like a grizzly or something is going to come in here. Right. Like, I'm not going to draw in a Bigfoot. But we've done all the techniques. The reason we did wood knocks out there was because the wood knocks were so prevalent there. And you can debunk wood knocks fairly easily. It's like one of the easier to debunk purported Bigfoot activities, because you get so many things in the woods that their bullfrogs will make a sound that sounds like that someone, smacking a stick up against a tree. Mm-hmm. But it was to such an extent, and it was so loud. I mean, I remember wood knocks out there that sounded like someone's, like they would echo across the valley we were in. They were so loud. And things like that. And it was so constant, but it didn't stay that way for very long. That had actually died off by, I think maybe even the time Mark and I went out there, Mark Matsky and I went out there. Cause Mark and I had some crazy stuff happen out there too. Cause Mark had a rock thrown at him. And then we found a track the next morning, on the hill across from the cabin. But yeah, we've done all the techniques. I just don't, beyond like wood knocking and whooping and walking around in the woods, I never know
as far as we go.
Yeah, I don't know what to do. Like, well, people are like, we do the recorders, right? So we put the recorders out, and we have a lot of the stuff's never been out there. We have hours of audio that we recorded out there with some really like clear vocalizations, wood knocks, some of the craziest wood knocks you'll hear on those recordings. And some of it is in the show, but a lot of it isn't. There's a lot of stuff we captured out there audio wise that's never been put out anywhere. So we did all that stuff, but there's a certain point where it's like, well, what else am I supposed to do? Like, doesn't it make sense?
Right.
Like, it's not like if you hear about like Jane Goodall or one of these people that habituates like a gorillas or whatever, I don't know that they're going out. I don't know how that works, but it doesn't seem like they would be, going out with audio recorders and banging on trees and doing all this kind of stuff. It just seems like you're just trying to put yourself in, the way Mark always puts it, is you put yourself in a location where you have the best chance to actually see something. More than likely you won't. Because it took 6 years or whatever for us to have anything happen. So,
well, Cliff, I listened to his podcast with Bobo, and like he always says, Bigfooting is just camping and then looking, like just listening. Like you just go out, camp, don't do anything crazy, and that's the best way to do it. Like,
don't tell our YouTube audience that. They've got their own opinions.
Oh, I know. Yeah.
So Small Town Monsters also does publishing. Can you tell us about that? How did that start?
We started the publishing side of things this past summer. We released a book by my buddy, Michael Shang. I have a hard time calling him Michael. I just call him Mikey. Mikey Shang, that is, Bally Raven. I forget her name. I forget her name. The artist. Anyway, it's a children's book. It's really adorable. It's great. That was the first book we published technically. And then we just put out, the Kinderhook Creature and Beyond. by Bruce Hallenbeck, which is a really great personal look at high strangeness in the, I wonder if that's like considered, I don't know if Kinderhook's considered Hudson Valley, but you're pretty darn close to the Hudson Valley if it isn't. And the Hudson Valley, by the way, is like one of my favorite places on earth, especially for like weirdness. It's frigging gorgeous. And then also the Legend of Sleepy Hollow set there. So
Middletown.
Yeah. Those are the two books that we put out so far. We've got a big one coming out this year now in the spring by Aaron Deese that looks at dogman sightings in Texas called the Texas Dogman Triangle, which also has a tie-in movie called the Dogman Triangle. It came about just because I never saw STM as just being about making movies. I did want to, you know, we've done podcasts, we've done YouTube stuff, the books were always going to happen. I want to do a magazine at some point. That's always been something I wanted to get off the ground as well. Mm-hmm. The other thing about it is, so there's a lot of niche paranormal publishers now, like publication, you know, people traditionally what I see is that they will put out just a massive ton of content. So there's a constant right. rotating list of books coming out from these people. And that's great. Like, it's great that a lot of these authors and stuff found a home, but I always wanted to very carefully curate what we put out and then spend a lot of time promoting it and making it special, not just for the authors so they can make the most money off their work as possible, but also because it will get it in front of as many people as we can and grow awareness for our authors as well. So that's kind of the idea. It's like the Vertigo Comics approach, I guess. Like I didn't want a billion different books under coming out immediately. Just, you know, one or two a year. And, you know, it's probably never going to be something that is at the forefront for STM, but it's something we want to take really seriously and put a lot of time and effort into putting this stuff out. And, and also help, I guess, to some degree, give people like Aaron and to a lesser degree, Bruce has been around for a long time, but give them, put them in front of an audience that might not have discovered them or might have taken a longer time to discover them.
Yeah.
Because the one thing I do know about STM is we've built a very loyal audience. We've been around for almost 8 years. Mm-hmm. So we have that, and that's what we can offer, you know, authors.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
That's great.
Yeah, we like to do a lot of community building too, you know, promoting, you know, artists that we like all the stuff that's on my wall behind me and having those people on and talking to them and getting their work out there. Mm-hmm. You know, a good example is like Corey and Renee Seymour. Like you use their masks in your stuff. And, you know, we've tried to promote them as much as possible.
I don't think Corey would be offended if I said this live or whatever, but we just hired him. He's actually making two full body Bigfoot suits for us for this year.
Awesome.
That's fantastic.
So we commissioned him to do that. And then, I love those two. They're great. And they're from my neck of the woods too. So in fact, and Corey's stuff has been in our movies. The Bellwitch mask was in Mark of the Bellwitch, which is not a Bellwitch mask. It's like he might call it like a Wendigo or something. We used it in Mark of the Bellwitch. And then I own his Mothman mask, which has never been in a movie, but I own his Mothman mask. And then he also had built this really cool stand for the Mothman mask. And I haven't hung it yet. It's supposed to go up somewhere on this wall eventually.
Yeah, we have his Mothman, and I guess it's the Wendigo. It's got antlers and like a little bit of the forehead. Mm. Yeah, he's amazing work. Amazing work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why we started the podcast, was to get our friends out there as well. You know, like we want to promote everyone that, you know, we just love.
Mm. Right.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
because everyone in this community has been amazing. So
yeah,
very uplifting.
We try. So tell us about Monster Fest coming up.
Monster Fest is funny right now because it's on my back burner, despite the fact it's not that far off, just because of the fact that we're launching the Kickstarter on February 2nd. And I keep saying, like, I keep telling the crew that once Kickstarter launches is kind of over, we have to really get the focus back on Monster Fest. But Monster Fest is going to be, I always wanted to do, we used to do a festival in Minerva called Minerva Monster Day. We did it 2 years in a row. The first year it was pretty much just vendors, and we showed movies, and then we had speakers talk about Bigfoot sightings and things like that. The second year, Lauren Coleman was there, and we had it was more of a film festival. We showed movies throughout the day and things like that, and there were outdoor vendors and stuff like that. I always wanted to have like a Comic-Con down there in Minerva, but the town has never been super welcoming of the Bigfoot thing. There's a reason we haven't done another Minerva Monster Day after the second one. It's going to be held at the Monster Fest is going to be held at the DoubleTree in downtown Canton, which used to be the McKinley Grand Hotel. It's like it's freaking gorgeous. It is an absolutely gorgeous hotel. And it's where a lot of the football players and stuff stay when they come in for Hall of Fame weekend and all that kind of stuff. So it's a really great hotel. We basically have taken it over. They have a really great restaurant in the hotel that's going to be serving a cryptid themed menu. Cool. And then there's going to be the goal of this event is not your typical con. Especially in the paranormal world, there's a real focus on speakers and people speaking. That isn't necessarily what our focus is here. There will be talks, but I think we're only doing like three or four. Mostly what we're doing is creating a place where you can come meet and talk directly to the people that we're having there as guests. Our guest list, I'm not going to get all the names, but we have
Cliff. Just check out the website.
Yeah, Cliff Berrickman will be there, and the Astonishing Legends guys will be there. Forrest Scott will be there. Richard Haddam, who wrote the Mothman Prophecies screenplay, will be there. Also, people don't know this. He's like a executive producer on the HBO Titan show. Mm-hmm. So that's the other big thing he does. But Jim Harold will be there. Lauren Coleman will be there. Lyle Blackburn, Shannon LeGros. There's a lot of a lot of people connected to STM movies as well. So we did try to get a lot of folk that have been in our films there. But there's a focus on podcasting for sure. Jeremiah Byron will be there from the Bigfoot Society podcast. Mm-hmm. We have a podcast room, so we're gonna host live podcast in the room.
That's cool.
And I know he's gonna do one. Scott and Forrest are doing one. Jim is probably gonna do one. You guys gonna be there?
We'll be there.
Yeah.
You should do one. So we're gonna do it'll be cool, but we did want to have a focus on podcasting. I love podcasts. It's like the main reason I'm into this stuff. We currently are not producing any STM podcasts, but
I was gonna ask about that.
Yeah, the hope is that we'll bring them back down the road when we have time. Our problem is we really are stretched thin. We're currently the crew consists of I'm trying to think of how many of us there are. It's like six of us. And, four of us are working full time on this. And then we have two part timers. And so the amount of content we put out per month is so insane. And then when we launch something like the Kickstarter, it just throws a whole other wrench in the works. So It's just right now that the amount of time we have to focus on the podcast is just non-existent. The other problem is I moved a half hour south of Wadsworth. And in doing that, I moved another half hour south of Mark Matsky, and he was already an hour and 20 minutes north of us. Yeah. So it's almost a 2 hour drive for him to come down here. So the days of him being able to come in once a week are completely gone. And I don't even know if he wants to drive down here once a month to record, you know, four episodes at a shot or whatever. Right. So there's the life stuff really got crazy for everybody this past year as well. Mm-hmm. And that threw a wrench in the podcast works too. So, just like we hit, I don't know. It was funny. Every one day that was like a big focus, and the next day it just wasn't, it just couldn't be done. Mm-hmm. And, it wasn't planned. It's just, that's just the way it worked out.
Yeah. That's just life.
Yeah.
It is just life. Yeah.
So can you tell us what's going on in February for the Kickstarter?
Yeah. And so we launch a Kickstarter every year on right at the beginning of February that funds what we do through the films we make, the feature films we make through the year. Mm-hmm. This year's, we are crowdfunding. What is it? On the Trail of Bigfoot, The Land of the Missing, which is a follow-up to On the Trail of Bigfoot, Last Frontier, which comes out in like a week and a half. That movie is focused on, like, there's a lot of indigenous people we talk to about native lore in Alaska. And so the focus of that one, it's actually pretty dark. It's like, it's a much darker take on the Bigfoot topic than I've done in any of the other On the Trail of Bigfoot stuff. And that was just by the nature of the witnesses we were talking to. Just a lot of it got real dark. And it's called Land of the Missing because there are so many missing people reports in the state of Alaska. We are not necessarily drawing a line between that and Bigfoot, although it will come up and we will get into that to some degree. But it's not, I wouldn't say it's like a missing 411 movie or anything like that.
Okay.
but it will, there are missing people reports. There's very aggressive encounters. There's one encounter that's crazy with like Bigfoot's attacking a cabin and people getting shot at and people shooting at people or Bigfoot's. It's wild. There's some really wild stuff in there. And then there is a missing person's story that is documented in the film that does seem to involve a Bigfoot. And we interviewed the a friend of the missing person. And then we have another friend that we still somehow are getting an interview with them, even though we didn't shoot it when we were there the first time. So that'll be one of our movies. The other is that Dogman Triangle, which we already shot back in October with Shannon LeGros and Aaron. And that has a tie-in book, which is also part of the Kickstarter campaign. I think it's in there as a hardcover, Kickstarter exclusive hardcover. Cool. And then there is, I'm blanking. what else do we have going? We literally just had a meeting about this the other day. On the Trail of Bigfoot, The Origin, which we're filming in May in British Columbia. Probably around the Harrison Hot Springs area. And then there's another one that I don't remember. How am I blanking this hard on?
You're
this?
Tired. It's okay.
It's okay. We're also putting you on the spot. So
yeah. Well, the big one that's a part of this year's campaign is the, I know American Werewolves 2 is the other one. And we're filming that in like the Southwest. And that, will hopefully I'll get to go. I loved making that movie because the first one, American Werewolves, because you know, our movies, they don't all have the same style by any stretch of the imagination, but it, you know, my edits don't change up that much, especially because I'm not doing UFOs anymore, like On the Trail of UFOs anymore. And that was the one where I got to really like go go crazy with like quick cutting and stuff like that, which is very different from my style of cutting something like On the Trail of Bigfoot. American Werewolves is a blast because I can do visually, I can do things that just seem so silly. And then you have to find a way to do it in a way that isn't silly. And it's a fun like exercise in editing technique.
Yeah.
When I get to do it. And it's a, it also is like one of those things where it's very nostalgic as I'm doing it. Cause I'll go back and watch old like 90s paranormal shows and 80s paranormal shows. And that's kind of how I figure out the visual look of that one, but it's okay. Such a blast to edit. And then the big one is Cryptid : the Chupacabra, which is, so we're doing a Kickstarter exclusive title this year. And I can talk about this here because I haven't talked about it anywhere else.
It's an exclusive.
Yes. Look at that. The plan is that this would be how we can get back to making movies about cryptids and topics that might not be super mainstream. Because essentially, if it's Kickstarter exclusive, then it's direct to consumer or direct to our audience. And if the audience will support it and the Kickstarter is successful enough, it's a thing where next year we already have the one. We want to do Goatman next year. So
which one?
Probably all of them. Okay. Cause yeah, these are pretty broad. They're not localized like the regular Small Town Monster series is. These are a broad look at,
okay,
at these, topics. So you get the whole history of everything. It's like the Chupacabra one starts in Puerto Rico and then, you know, moves up into the US, or into, never mind, whatever. But
we get it.
But we're really excited about it because it does, you know, the fact is, like, I don't think people realize a lot of the movies we make flop. Every title we make eventually finds a fairly large audience, you know, in the millions of people, but in terms of like the money you put into it versus what comes back, it's not like every movie we put out is like a smash hit. This year alone, Night Visitors and Jersey Devil were both like pretty big flops. And it's unfortunate because it seems like anytime we dip our toe into anything other than Bigfoot or Dogman, it just doesn't connect. And I think that's because, you know, there's an audience for the Bigfoot thing, no matter what. And there's a growing interest in Dogman. You know, whereas something like Jersey Devil doesn't have that built in audience anymore that it once did. The interest just isn't what it once was. And we've had this happen with Mark of the Bell Witch, Momo, which is technically a Bigfoot, but we didn't use Bigfoot anywhere in the branding for it. It wasn't marketed as a Bigfoot movie. So those two flopped. Mark of the Bell Witch flopped. Mothman Legacy flopped, which is one of the weirder flops we've ever had.
That's weird.
I wouldn't have.
So it seems like anytime we're going in a direction that isn't just your standard Bigfoot or Dogman, it doesn't connect with a larger audience until it becomes like a free to view thing on. And this is like some inside baseball BS that's probably really boring to listen to, but it is how, if our audience wants us to make movies about stuff like Goatman and even Flatwoods Monster, this is the way we're going to have to do it is.
Okay.
By tying these titles into the Kickstarter, and if it's supported, if the jump in earnings on the Kickstarter is big enough, then hopefully going forward, this would be a thing we do each year. So, and it would also go from being four titles a year, which we've done for the last 2 years, to five titles a year. You know, in terms of the feature films, we are going to get to six in the next year or two as well. So
nice.
It's just going to keep growing. And plus there's all the YouTube stuff as well.
Yeah. Is me there, and Rick always do the Kickstarters for you.
Yeah. So. I think I've done at least two, maybe three.
Awesome.
Yeah.
I always want my name in the credits.
Right.
Yeah. The Kickstarter was crazy. We were talking about the Kickstarter the other night because, this past year was wild because we had hit our goals so darn fast. It was like within the first hour or two, we hit the goal.
Does that still blow your mind every time? Are you just like,
it does. Okay. Yeah, it does. I get, but anyone at STM will tell you I basically have a nervous breakdown prior to the Kickstarter launch every year. So it doesn't matter. Like I don't sleep the night before. I have not ever slept the night before the Kickstarter launch. And then I don't really sleep until it hits the goal, which is really unfortunate because we've decided to up the goal this year. So I'm probably not going to sleep for like a week instead of being able to go right to sleep like I did this past year. But it is mind blowing when it's happening, especially the first, it seems like the first 20 minutes are just, you can't keep up.
Chaos. Yeah.
Like, yeah. It's, you can't keep up with the names, and we always do the live stream. So people are watching us, you know, panic or not panic, but get extraordinarily happy, like alive. But it is a wild thing, especially because, you know, we did a Kickstarter in 2015 for Minerva, and our asking goal was like $600. And, you know, cause we just wanted to produce the DVDs and we didn't have the money, and we did it through Kickstarter. The great thing about our Kickstarters too, just from a backer standpoint, I back a lot of Kickstarters every year. Hmm. I think you can see this directly on our page, but I back at least a couple every year. And I'm a big fan of the campaigns where it you're getting back what you're putting into it. And so we go to great lengths to make sure that what people put into the Kickstarter, in terms of pledge amount, they're getting back.
Like it's worth it.
Yeah. With the rewards. Yeah. So we go over the numbers a billion times. I mean, like we, you know, just to make sure like someone isn't paying too much for what they're getting. So I always say it's more like a pre-order campaign than it is a crowdfunded campaign anymore. This year's is going to be pretty cool. I'm excited to have the book involved, and then we're doing like the exclusive, posters. And then there's, a t-shirt that, John is creating as well. So there's going to be a lot of
nice
stuff in it. Yeah. Oh, and we're doing, so we did the Last Frontier, the DVD and Blu-ray for Last Frontier include the Beyond the Trail tie-ins to Last Frontier, which in the case of, so I just got the Blu-rays for that today. And they're, it is crazy because the movie's 87 minutes, but then the second disc has 150 minutes of extra content. So nice. It's like, and we're going to do that again next year, or this year with the British Columbia, On the Trail of Bigfoot. We'll have Alex there, and Alex will be filming in BC too. So, and that will be a tie-in DVD as well.
Well, that's something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Is there any plan to put the YouTube media on physical discs at some point in the future?
We've talked about it. I'll tell you what we've been kicking around the idea of doing is launching a Patreon, where that would be the whole point of it. Is to have a Patreon where if you want that, because that the number of people that actually want that stuff on physical media is not actually that high. So to put the money into doing it doesn't make a ton of sense, because we might have a hard time actually getting it to people. Mm. The Patreon idea is that would be how we put all that YouTube stuff on physical media. We just don't know what that looks like yet. We're still trying to figure that out, but there is a plan to do it. We just don't. I also know that we're hard at work on getting all that YouTube content on other platforms as well. It should be pretty soon. Beyond the Trail, especially, will be available on like Amazon and Tubi and that kind of stuff too. So
very cool.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. A lot of your stuff is on Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is it all your movies?
All of our movies are, but they, yeah, I mean, yeah, I'll tell you the goal, the ultimate goal, we just talked about this the other day. The ultimate goal is to completely get away from having to work with a distributor. We're signing up for another year with 1091, and they've been great to some extent.
Except for the Skinwalker thing.
That wasn't even close to the only thing we dealt with. I mean, the Jersey Devil got delayed by 2 months. There's been a lot. So we we are going to distribute with them again for 2023, but the ultimate goal would be a scenario where we make movies and then it's going just direct to our audience. Either that's cutting out the middleman distributor and using an aggregator to get the movies on like Prime and stuff like that. Or we've been kicking around the idea of eventually getting to a scenario where we're putting our movies direct to YouTube. You know, on launch day, you could go watch it on the other platforms or you can watch it on YouTube. At the very least, we want to integrate the members only section of our YouTube into the films or integrate the films into the members only. And we are starting to post the movies we have the rights to on our YouTube. Boggy Creek Monster goes up this Sunday for the public. It's already available for the channel members. And then next will be The Mothman and Point Pleasant. That'll probably be sometime this spring. And then Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. We have the rights to all those again. Mm-hmm. And actually, like the rights to anything 1091 put out in 2020 revert to us sometime late this year as well. So,
oh,
nice.
Yeah.
Good.
It's a short timetable. That's good.
Yeah.
Rick, did you want to ask him questions?
Yeah. So Seth, yeah, you can say no to this, but one thing I like to do with guests is pretty much ask them their opinion on cryptids, whether or not they think they're real tangible things. Mm. It can be a rapid fire, yes, no kind of thing. So if you're awake enough for that, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm vaguely awake enough. I'm fairly awake.
Cool. So obviously you're not sure about Bigfoot. You think maybe.
Oh, I mean, I'm 99%. That's okay.
That's, you know, a yes. Like,
yeah, it's a yes. I mean, they're, yeah, Bigfoot's real.
Okay. That's the answer I'm looking for. Cool. So obviously we'll go through the classics. Loch Ness Monster.
Maybe. I don't know enough. I love Loch Ness and I've watched a lot of stuff on it, but not in a while. And
just eels.
I absolutely adore lake monsters. I really do.
Same here.
But it's one of my favorite topics. It's also unfortunately not, it's one of those cryptids where we just haven't had a lot of success when we try to cover it. Loch Ness. Yeah, I mean, more than likely it's something like a sturgeon or something else.
Yeah. It's all eels.
Yeah,
that's true. So, okay, we'll move back to the States. Mothman.
Well, this one, I do believe in Mothman, but it's not the exciting Mothman. It's not the Mothman Bert. It's the, I believe there were multiple things going on in Point Pleasant, obviously. But even when it comes to Mothman, there's so many different descriptions of what the Mothman was or what it looked like. So I do believe that there was some sort of abnormally large bird in the area at the time. Yeah. I don't necessarily buy into the traditional view of the Mothman. You know?
Okay.
Gotcha. That's a good answer. We'll do something from Laura's neck of the woods. Thunderbirds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thunderbirds.
That's quick.
Yeah, Thunderbirds. Well, Thunderbirds and Bigfoot are the two that I have no problem saying yes. I think Thunderbirds are real. I don't think they're a species of massive bird that we're like a species of undiscovered massive bird. I think there's genetic mutations and there's freak birds.
Freak birds.
Yeah, that are very large and grow larger than you know normal. But I do. You know, I've talked to too many witnesses and including people I know and trust that claim they've seen something.
What about like the living dinosaur, like a pterosaur?
Sure. Yeah. I think I'll go in on that. I could see that happening. I've never talked about it, but I desperately want there to be dinosaurs roaming around somewhere on Earth still. It's one of the reasons I love like the Mekele Mbembe.
In the Congo.
Yeah,
that Congo guy. I love that.
Yeah. No, I that's the stuff I grew up with too. So I really like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Let's see. We'll go back to lake monsters. Ogopogo. Do you think it's like a similar thing to Loch Ness?
I'm not educated enough on Ogopogo. It's one of the ones that I first got into, but I haven't watched or read or looked into anything in a while. You know, my viewpoint on this stuff does change a lot when I talk to witnesses or or hear witness stories. Mm-hmm. You know, because I shot down Loch Ness Monster, but at the same time, like if I talk to a couple of witnesses about it,
then you're a believer.
Yeah, I might feel differently.
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're like, don't come at me with Dog Man, whatever you do.
I was about to ask, so I'm glad you told me not to.
No,
it's Dad. Okay.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So, yeah, what do you think about Dog Men / werewolves?
So, I do think there's a lot of Dog Man reports that are Bigfoot related. Mm. Not enough to write everything off. So this is the one cryptid where I will go into the realm of the supernatural and say I think it's somehow related to the supernatural. Okay. You know, whether it's spiritual or whatever you want to call it. There's too many ties between Dogman and dark rituals or the occult or thing, you know, like there's just something there to that. I just had lunch with a buddy of mine yesterday, Ward Heine, who made the Dark Holler. I don't know if you've seen Dark Holler, but it's like a five, six episode supernatural miniseries. Ward's like a really great filmmaker, but he lives in Akron. And he's doing a lot of work in that kind of area. He's done some work with like with Tony from The Confessionals and stuff like that. But that's like his opinion's kind of in the same, you know, realm as mine. I mean, it's just, I can honestly tell you that there is not a single person I've interviewed who's seen a dog man who didn't have a sighting either in close proximity to some sort of burial mound or religious something, like everything is somehow tied to either religion or spiritualism or something. It's all all of it, like all of it. And if it isn't that, then they're lying. Like that's right. It seems to be that way to me. Like I've talked to people who were like, oh yeah, no, I didn't have there was no mound near there, and it was typically someone who I just didn't buy their story to begin with.
Okay.
So yeah, to me that's the one where like there's something else going on there, like this dark, like it's a very disturbing kind of subject. It really is, and it's the one that I keep being pulled back to. It is funny, I think Aaron's on the opposite end of the spectrum for me. I think Aaron believes these things are like flesh and blood creatures that, you know, like are just like an undiscovered upright canid, which, not to, I'm not downplaying his opinion, but it does seem absurd. I mean, no offense, Aaron, but
I'm in the same boat. I feel like Dogman to me as a physical entity is absurd. There's literally zero substantiating evidence to point to that. I'm a flesh and blood
physically
guy.
It doesn't work. It doesn't make sense physically. No. I mean, that's one of the reasons I think it's supernatural, to be honest with you. Like biologically, the way these things can stand on tiny, like there's too many things at play here that don't make sense with the physicality of how they move and things. I also think a lot of what we call dogman sightings are just large wolves, you know, or like a coyote and things like that.
Right.
I saw a lot of that with Bray Road, because so many of the reports were of, you know, quadrupeds rather than bipeds. And it seemed like so many of those reports were something, you know, that was probably just like a, you know, an abnormally large, you know, probably like a, some sort of hybrid coyote
wolf. Yeah.
Yeah. But Linda would have argued vehemently against me on that front.
I didn't have the opportunity to meet Linda before she passed. But
she was great. I hadn't seen her in a couple of years, but we had actually just emailed I could even pull the email up. I asked her to write the intro to Aaron's book and she couldn't do it. If I had known her health was as bad as it was, I wouldn't have even bothered her.
Right.
But she was super sweet. Her son and her, they actually had made a documentary. I don't know whatever happened to the documentary because I don't think it came out. I need to contact him about that. They had made a documentary and it, I'm going to say it was like 2018, something like that. They made this documentary and I think it was about like mountain lions or not mountain lions, but like phantom cats. I might be wrong, but I swear that's what it was about. I'd have to look back through my emails, but we had talked about it.
Yeah, that would be good to see.
She was unbelievably sweet. Very like tenacious, but of all the people, I can tell you of all the like well-regarded, renowned figures in the paranormal world, she was the easiest to work with.
Yeah,
like there was no ego or, and yeah,
she's very sweet and yeah,
and there was a genuine interest in what she was covering. That's one of the things that I don't think a lot of people realize about this field is that the people that are in it for the longest amount of time, who are probably the highest regarded, they're also very cynical traditionally, or even just kind of bored with the whole thing. And they're kind of doing it in a paint by numbers way. She was not that way. She was genuinely.
She was passionate about it.
Yeah. She loved it.
Yeah.
And to the point where I talked to her at CrypticCon. The last time we were together was at CrypticCon. I can't remember what year, probably 2018 or 2019, something like that. And we talked about, it would have been 2019, I think. We talked about Dogman stuff. And I was like, I was trying to talk to her about life stuff, but she wanted to just talk about Dogman. So that's what we talked about. And, you know, she was super passionate about it. She was awesome.
Yeah. You got to respect that. Yeah.
Yeah.
And for anybody,
yeah, I think
who's
I
not
met
aware,
her. Oh, so go ahead.
I was going to say it's Linda Godfrey. We didn't say her full name. For anybody who's not aware, she has so many books out there, which are all sitting behind me on my shelf. Mm-hmm. But it's just a prolific author. Obviously,
my name
sweetheart.
Is on the back of one of those.
Oh,
yeah,
I have to dig through them.
She got a pull quote. I forget which one it is, but there's one of them has a pull quote for me on the back of the book, which is nice. One of my prouder accomplishments.
That's sweet.
Yeah, I met her in 2018. She did a presentation at a library about ghosts and just other lore in the area. Mm-hmm. And I was able to, you know, watch that. And I had talked with her afterwards. And yeah, she's very, like, she was a very sweet woman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She knows so much. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whenever someone like that passes, though, what always concerns me is what happened to their archive. Because she was I mean, we filmed some of it for Bray Road because she brought boxes of stuff. I mean, she had boxes of research material and then she took notes. I mean, she was like, you know, she was a reporter.
Right.
She had that old school kind of reporter mentality about stuff. I just hope that they do something with that work, either give it to, you know, like a museum or something that, so it doesn't just
go to waste and
get destroyed.
There.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Get that up to Lauren.
Yeah.
His museum. That would be a perfect fit.
Yeah.
Well, I had one other question since you were open to the supernatural. What's your take on the whole Stan Gordon, UFOs, Bigfoot, orbs, ghost lights kind of connection?
I don't connect any of it.
Okay. Yeah.
I've experienced it when we were, the Ridge episode number two is kind of, when it comes to the night investigation stuff, it's kind of a cluster. It was very difficult for Eli to make sense of what was happening because the audio on Zach's camera is gone. There was just a buzzing noise. So Eli had a heck of a time trying to put that together. But that night there were mystery lights in the woods everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's not, it wasn't us. I realized we were in two groups and like, it's easy for people to get it. It was not us. And we were hearing things that sounded Bigfoot related in the vicinity of where the orbs were, or the lights were, but I don't connect any of that stuff. The fact is that there are such a the number of reports that tie Bigfoot to UFOs is so tiny that you really have to do some mental gymnastics to connect something like UFOs to Bigfoot. The lights in the woods, I get a little more, but I also think those lights in the woods are in the woods all over the country, and probably the world, and that Bigfoot is in forests all around the country, and the two probably overlap on occasion. But other than the Chestnut Ridge, it's not like there's another place where you get that same kind of confluence of activity. Skinwalker Ranch, but it's just such a small, it's just the UFO, the high strangeness stuff is such a tiny, makes up such a tiny number of the total, you know, reports of this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. You really have to stretch to connect the two, I think. And it doesn't, you know, if they're coming out of UFOs, why are they killing deer? You know, like why do people witness them killing hogs and like carrying hogs off?
Right.
And why, you know, like that's my problem with the interdimensional idea is like, you know, like why, what are they, why, what, why? The funniest to me is always like, and I'm not knocking him, I love the guy, Paul Bartholomew is one of those. He's very much in the camp of like, more than likely this is an interdimensional being. Mm. But he's also one of these guys who's showing me his migratory route maps. Mm-hmm. In the same, and I'm like, well, why then? Like, why are they migrating? If they're coming out, like, why wouldn't you just go back into your other dimension or whatever and hide out there till the winter's over? Like it doesn't, that stuff, I can't make sense of that.
I can't either.
Yeah. I get that it's a big topic right now, and it's cool to explore that stuff. I'm totally fine with people exploring that stuff, mm-hmm. because maybe I'm wrong and eventually it does, you know, maybe that's the thing that leads us to an answer. Also the stories are great, and there's a reason our fourth movie was Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. Like not our fourth or fifth movie was Invasion on Chestnut Ridge. You can't beat the stories,
right.
But the stories are so few and far between. It's not common.
Well, yeah, I love watching and reading and hearing about it. Do I believe it? No, but it's interesting and entertaining.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, take it for that. But yeah, one thing I want to point out for anybody who's listening, I really appreciated your On the Trail of Hauntings. The fact that you guys tried to basically show that everything you were experiencing could be explained by natural processes.
It didn't begin that way. That's just how it went. Mm-hmm. We never experienced anything. I mean, everyone, I retract that. There was, like, for me, there was one thing that happened that was weird, but we didn't set out to do that. It's just like, it was the nature of what was happening. We would go to a place and you'd be there for, you know, a couple hours and nothing happens. And that doesn't mean that we managed to completely debunk ghosts or anything. It just means that more than, I think the show was more than anything, a response to stuff like Ghost Adventures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where you have a show where these people go into a haunted location for like 2-3 hours and people are being possessed and like stuff. I mean, stuff's mm-hmm. flying off walls and all the, you're filming shadow people. And that just doesn't, I don't believe it. I don't believe it. And television lies, by the way. Like,
oh yeah,
right.
The amount of shows that I'm aware of that have outright hoaxed stuff. It's all of them. I mean, every show's tried to do that kind of thing. I mean, I've talked to Cliff, and I've talked to Cliff and Bobo about things that happened during the first season of Finding Bigfoot that they were not okay with, that had to fight to get it taken out of subsequent seasons. So that stuff does, I didn't want to get super specific there.
Right. That's good.
Well, no, he's talked about it on the pod. Like he talks with Bobo about it, about the stuff that they, so it's out there. Just not, I don't think specifics though. Yeah.
So, I mean, the show was a response to, a lot of what we do is a response to networks or the way this stuff is portrayed in the mainstream. It just is, because someone needed to do it. And you know, I still think the best stuff being done in these fields is being done independently. It's not what's on television by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Now, I also wanted to say I really appreciated the approach of Paranormal Unexplained for its brief run. Mm-hmm. Because we, my wife and I love yelling at paranormal caught on camera because it's all ridiculous.
Right.
And that's what I liked about Paranormal Unexplained. Like, you were doing the same thing we were doing. And I miss it. I still miss that show. I wish.
I know. I know. And that's like one of those ones where, you know, when we launched the YouTube, it was like, let's throw a lot of stuff at the wall and see what sticks.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, what didn't stick was Paranormal Unexplained, Hauntings,
my two favorites.
Podcasts.
I know. That's good.
It is. It's all stuff I liked. I mean, I loved making Hauntings. It was a blast. It was hilarious. Like some of the, I mean, one of the wildest, this will never be released, but we filmed an episode in a haunted hotel in West Virginia with the Moth Boys. Moth Boys were there. It'll never be released because it went off the rails immediately. I mean, it was just
that's perfect.
Complete right. chaos for like 4 hours.
Oh my gosh.
And so, yeah, I mean, those shoots were so much fun. And it is like that kind of shoot, that kind of shoot will always be my favorite because, you know, I said, we don't go into anything with a plan. It's not necessarily true, especially with something like this Dogman Triangle thing we just did. I had to have a plan because Eli is editing that rather than me. Mm-hmm. So I can't necessarily just shoot by the seat of my pants and then know that I'll put it together in post because I'm not the one putting it together in post. But stuff like Hauntings and Bigfoot Project, and that's probably how Alex and Eli feel about BTT and the series that Eli is launching, that Mysteries and Monsters. I mean, that it is, there's something really wonderful about just going out with a camera and then capturing what happens and then figuring out the story in post. Like that's a really freeing experience for anyone that creates this kind of stuff. And that is like I do, that's something I miss about, you know, like what I'm doing, because everything I do right now is very structured. It has to have some sort of structure. I go out and just capture stuff, but there is like there has to be some sort of idea of what we're, you know, like what's the story here, what are we doing.
That's unfortunate.
I'll get it back. I mean, like I still want to do Bigfoot Project. I just need to figure out what that's going to be. It's not going to be me at the cabin anymore because there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
That would be like episode after episode of like Tommy and I watching Dinosaur Train on an iPad.
Right.
So I don't know. I want to launch it again at some point. I'm just not sure what it is. And I'm still doing YouTube stuff as well. I'll actually be filming in West Virginia next week for 2 days with the Wild and Weird West Virginia guys.
Nice.
For the next season of Sasquatch Unearthed. The first season was The Ridge. The second season is tentatively called The Mountain State. I don't know if that'll be what it is or if it'll be like Bigfoot in the Mountain State or whatever. And then there's another season of that we'll be shooting in the spring back on the Olympic Peninsula. Nice. So we're going to do a whole season of that on the Olympic Peninsula as well.
That's awesome.
Part of me wants you to call it Bigfoot Almost Heaven just to confuse people.
Like, that'd be a good one. Bigfoot Almost Heaven sounds like a softcore. Right.
I'm there for it.
Yeah. Erotic fiction.
If that's something you're moving toward, I think there's a market for it.
Oh, there definitely is. Zach has joked about years that we should be working in cryptid porn because it's like that's where the money is.
Yeah. You heard it here, folks.
Yeah.
Small town monsters getting into cryptid smut.
No. Full disclaimer that it'll never happen.
Oh, bummer.
All right. Let's do some rapid fire questions. You ready?
Yeah.
All right. What was your favorite cartoon growing up?
Oh, favorite cartoon? G.I. Joe.
Okay.
G.I. Joe. Solid choice.
Yeah.
Who was your first celebrity crush?
Oh, I get made fun of this all for this all the time. It was Helen Hunt. I was absolutely enamored with Helen Hunt at the age of like 6, 7, 8. I had pictures of her hanging next to my bed. And that is not your traditional, you know.
No,
this is that's even pre-Twister Helen Hunt.
Yeah.
Like that.
Yeah. Although when Twister came out, that really propelled it forward.
as did it all of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was just thinking of her and like Girls Just Want to Have Fun. That's like, I think that was the first movie I saw with her when I was younger. What is your favorite like big monster movie? Like, is it like Godzilla or?
So that's a great question. I really adore the original King Kong. I think if that counts, the 30s, the Willis O'Brien one. That's probably my favorite. I love, I mean, my mom raised me on like Ray Harryhausen movies.
Yeah.
So Jason and the Argonauts has big monsters in it, but I'd go the original King Kong. I mean, that King Kong movie, I don't talk about it much, but I think that movie probably has as much of a role in me being a filmmaker as anything, because I remember so vividly seeing it for the first time. Mm-hmm. My dad was buying a van and we were sitting in I don't know if you guys remember the problem. You're probably both younger than me, but like
I think we're older than you.
Oh, that's right. We had this discussion, didn't we?
Oh, I'm 39. Laura, you're 40.
I'm 40.
Yeah. Okay, I'm older than both of you. But yeah, the car buying process used to take like 10 hours to get through the whole thing. And my dad was buying a van, and I sat in the lobby of a used car dealership and watched King Kong like 6 times in a row. And that is one of my favorite memories of any movie. But yeah, King Kong, I do love this movie called Monsters. And it's Garrett. It's the guy that directed Rogue One, who, by the way, is apparently an STM fan. Gareth.
Oh, that's cool.
What is it? Gareth Edwards. Gareth. There's Gareth Evans, and then there's Gareth Edwards. The one guy directed The Raid, and the other guy directed Monsters, which are both great movies, by the way.
Rick's looking it up right now.
The
Raid 2 is great.
Yeah, though they're amazing. Monsters is really good too. What's his name? Gareth Edwards. Yeah.
Yeah. Adam told me that they used to have a Godzilla. I don't know if they still do this, but they used to have a Godzilla director's night once a month. So it'd be Adam Adam and Gareth, Mike Dougherty, who is an STM fan. I know that one for sure.
Yeah.
What's his name? The guy that made Skull Island. And they would get together, and Adam texted me one night that they had just finished dinner and were sitting down to watch The Mothman of Point Pleasant, which is nice. a wild concept.
Yeah. It makes up for everything financially flopping, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell myself that.
Yeah. Out of all your action figures, what's your favorite one? What's your most prized possession?
Oh, that's a really good, great question. So my son is obsessed with Miles right now. The Miles Morales, and I bought a Miles hot toy. That was unfortunately what got me into this whole hot toy obsession now that I have. So it might be that first hot toy. It's the bodega suit, the bodega cat suit. Miles, he's wearing his hoodie, then he's got a backpack, and there's a cat hanging out of it.
Okay.
And it's really great. I love that one, but I don't know. It's probably one of my turtles.
Favorite Ninja Turtle?
Leonardo is my favorite Ninja Turtle. You know what? My favorite toy is probably going to be my the Super Samurai Leonardo, because I found it. I bought the original again, and I had that as a kid, and I think that's probably my favorite.
Nice.
I think you can profile people based on what Ninja Turtle is their favorite.
That's what I hear.
Yeah.
Well, that's unfortunate, because Leo's kind of a cranky he's not the funnest of the turtles, that's for sure. Well, that fits, I guess.
Yep. People have said you're a buzzkill, so that makes sense.
Shannon calls me Old man Breedlove. So
there we go.
Yeah, that's right. We were talking about the age before, and you're saying how you're an old man now because you go to sleep early. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, you
yeah.
look great for 53. So I
yeah, yeah. thank
whatever
you.
Whatever you're doing, doing it correctly.
It's blood. I drink blood.
All right, last question. What world record do you think you have a shot at beating?
Most time editing. I don't know. Most movies made. I mean, at our current rate, we could give a, you know, like Roger Corman a run for his money.
There you go.
Keep it up.
All right, Seth, thank you so much for being on the show. Where can people find you?
Smalltownmonsters.com, YouTube, just look up Small Town Monsters. Those are the two best. We're on all social media as well. Hmm. And including TikTok now, which apparently just happened yesterday. So
nice.
We're all over the place.
You're hip and you're with it. You're
on TikTok. Yeah, that wasn't me. I didn't do it. I don't even know what TikTok is. So
nice. And then what events do you have coming up?
And just Monster Fest. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I'm going to say that and then something else is going to come up and I'm going to forget about it. But yeah, the only thing that I know right now is Monster Fest. And I mean, we'll be at Mothman Festival next year. Mm-hmm. We are going to try to sponsor some events this year. So I'm hoping we'll be at the Moth Boys Monster Bash event in West Virginia. And I want to sponsor that as well. And we might do the Great Smoky Mountain Bigfoot conference again. And I don't know. We do. Yeah. We only do anymore. We only do like 4 or 5 events each year. Mm. And we try to scale it back as much as possible. So
yeah. Well,
tell everybody, if you want to come hang out, you can share our booth at the Loveland Frog Festival.
Oh, are you doing that?
Yeah, yeah. That's in March 2nd, 3rd, something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just saw the poster. Cool. I think everyone I know is doing that event, but yeah, it's a cool one.
Yeah.
Theater in spirit then.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Rick, where can people find us?
Oh man. Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, cause we're cool. Twitter, Parler, Truth Social, Mastodon,
OnlyFans,
OnlyFeet, Christian Mingle. Wow. Yeah. No, everywhere. We have a Redbubble. We have what's the
big
other
cartel.
Thing? Big cartel. Yeah.
Grindr.
Yep. Grindr. Yeah. Yep. You'll find Walter on Grindr. Yeah. I think that's it. Is that everything?
Yeah. I think. Okay. All right. Seth, thanks again.
Yes, and, thank you.
Yeah, we'll be seeing you soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, Seth. Yep. Bye.
Catch you guys later.
All right, bye.